forward in a sudden burst of attention. You will all be participating in research projects, and in 1 month you will make a presentation to the class as well as turn in a 20-page paper.
I thought we weren't going to have papers in this class.
The speaker was the girl with tightly pulled back braids, or Stella Hawkins, as Nick had learned since the first day of class. In all the weeks since then, she had never raised her hand once when asking a question, driving Alice to grind her teeth, but not even denting Dean Blaine's plastered-on grin. Well, that was usually the case at any rate. Today, Stella's question triggered a slight twitch in Dean Blaine's right cheek. Nick was confident no one else would have noticed it, but to him, it was plain as day. That meant he wasn't as sure-footed on the topic of this project, or that there was something about it that made him uncomfortable. It wasn't much, and Nick wasn't sure what to do with it, but it was something, and something didn't mean nothing. Nick trained his complete attention on the now-speaking Dean.
"That is generally the policy," Dean Blaine replied, no trace of the tremor from his face audible in his voice. "However, this is something of a special project. It will be a team project, one to help you all branch out and better get to know your fellow classmates. It will be on the full career of a hero from the list I'll be hanging on the board. I want you to trace them from their training, their career path, and their retirement. Yes, Miss Adair."
Alice's hand had been up since halfway through the dean's explanation, and it seemed she was a few seconds short of waving it around like an elementary school student to demand his attention.
"How is this applicable from an ethics standpoint? This seems more like a history project."
"As I was explaining before you put your hand up," Dean Blaine replied curtly, "this project will trace the life of a famous hero. While I do want you to spend some time discussing the major events in their life, the real purpose of this project is to look over some of their exploits from a more personal level. Look at some of the foes they dealt with, and some of the battles they lost. Your goal is to help me, and the rest of your class, understand the motivations and complications of the person behind the mask."
"How does that help us with ethics?"
Stella belted from the back of the room.
"Think of it as advanced preparation. I want you to see what these people went through, because a hero's life is often fraught with hard choices and living with the consequences of them. By digging deep and understanding choices that past heroes have made, I hope you will ask yourself what decisions you would have made in similar circumstances," Dean Blaine explained. "Because one day, those life-and-death decisions could be on your shoulders, and it's best to start preparing for them sooner rather than later."
Dean Blaine braced himself for more questions as his explanation finished, but the somber subject matter seemed to have cowed even Stella. It wasn't surprising. After all, when one thought about becoming a hero, one usually focused on the glory and pride that came with defending the innocent. Rarely did people stop and consider the responsibility that came along with the job, where the direction in which to punch a villain could result in a building full of people losing their lives.
"Okay, then,"
Dean Blaine said, making a snap judgment to steer the thoughts of his class toward less chilling waters.
"I'll now announce the pairs for the projects. You will have the rest of the class to discuss possible heroes from the list I'll be posting in a minute, and the two of you have until the end of the week to let me know your pick. Don't hesitate, though. They are first come, first serve, and each hero may only be done by one team."
Dean Blaine produced a piece of paper and began calling out pairs of students. As each team was named, the duo would rise from their seats and flag each other down from their respective positions, stopping only when one relocated to the other's area. Nick tried not to center too much on disappointment. If the list was already chosen, then he couldn't use his power to affect the outcome. If he had known and had blasted out some luck during its creation, the situation would have been different. But luck was only applicable to objects in motion. No amount of luck changed the dice roll once the results were written down. It would have been beneficial for Nick to land on Herschel or Vince's team and solidify the sense of friendship he had been crafting with them. But as Herschel was announced to be paired with someone named Alex, and Vince was put with Will Murray, it became clear that Nick would be expanding his social circle. It could be worse, though. Increased connections were rarely a bad thing.
"Next team," Dean Blaine announced. "Nicholas Campbell and Alice Adair."
"At least it's not the telepath,"
Nick mumbled under his breath. Humorously enough, Alice was muttering approximately the same thing from her own desk across the room. The two began the dance of waving, determining who would move over to the other's area, neither one particularly excited about their partner, but each confident they hadn't gotten the shortest stick in the room. Many might have believed that dubious honor went to Herschel, who drew up a seat next to his new partner.
"Hi," Herschel said. "I'm Herschel Daniels." "Oh, I know," said the sandy-haired boy. "I heard all about the fight this weekend. I'm Alex, though. Alex Griffin."
"Nice to meet you, Alex," Herschel said. "So, I guess you already know about Roy, then?"
"Totally,"
Alex said, nodding enthusiastically.
"Seems like an awesome ability, turning into someone crazy strong and tough."
"It's not as great as one might suspect,"
Herschel said delicately. He was hesitant to badmouth Roy at the moment. Roy had attended gym the day before, but he'd been different from usual. Less proud, certainly, but less sure of himself as well. Herschel knew better than most what that was like, so the last thing he wanted to do was pile abuse onto his recovering alter ego.
"It can be fun, though, and it's rarely boring. What about you, Alex? What's your power?"
"Nothing too exciting,"
Alex replied.
"I'm basically a Jedi."
34. "Looks like we got Everest," Vince said, striding into the library and depositing his books on a small table occupied by a short boy wearing glasses.
"That's great!"
Will, also known as the short boy wearing glasses, exclaimed,
"I thought for sure someone would have beaten us to him."
"When I spoke with the dean, he told me we were the third team to make our selection," Vince replied, taking his seat and spreading out the books. "I guess the others are taking their sweet time in picking a subject."
"Who else had been chosen?"
Will asked, as he unloaded the contents of his own backpack onto the table, cluttering it even further. Apparently Shane and some Amber Girl took Captain Starlight, and Doc Nominal was chosen by guys named Gilbert and Adam, Vince recounted. Fortunately, there hadn't been many names on the sign-up sheet, so the few that were present were easy to recall.
"Oh, I know Gilbert,"
Will said.
"He and I are in the same physics class together above ground. Good guy, if a bit of a slacker on studying. No one else, though, huh? I was sure that Alice girl who was always asking questions would be first in line."
"That's not an unfair assumption," Vince admitted. "She's working with Nick, though. I don't think they exactly dislike one another, but they never seem to talk much. Then again, I don't think any of us really talk a lot with Alice, except in passing."
"She doesn't seem like she would lack social skills,"
Will observed. "No, she doesn't. Really the opposite," Vince said thoughtfully. "She's always polite and composed. I guess in the whirlwind of the first few weeks, we just haven't had time to get to know one another."
"I imagine that's the case with many of us,"
Will said.
In fact, it's possible that's why Dean Blaine gave us this project in the first place. It does force us to expand our social circles a bit.
You might be right, Vince agreed. Though that still doesn't explain what's holding up Alice and Nick on choosing a hero for their project.
I respectfully disagree, Alice said through a thin mask of patience. I think Lord Pholos will make an excellent case of study for our project, and is not a boar in a cape at all.
Ah, oh, come on, Nick replied, spinning his chair in a circle and staring up at the ceiling. Do you know what Lord Pholos was before he got into the game? A manager for a paperclip company. Seriously, how could he possibly be more boring?
Maybe the fact that he was one of the few older men who became certified as a hero is, in itself, an interesting story,
Alice retorted. Great story, that one. He was born in a family that had religious disagreements with the existence of supers, so he was raised to pretend he was human. Then his wife leaves him at 30, his normal world falls apart, and he escapes into a new one. One where he can use his powers to have the fame and respect that eluded him in his younger years. Nick returned.
That's... well... it's still... fine.
Alice spat out bitterly. The two of them had been at it for some time now, camped out in the common room of Melbrook. Alice making suggestions, and Nick spearing holes in them. He had to admit, she'd picked a few that would have actually made exceptional projects, and that was the problem. Nick didn't want to be exceptional. He wanted to coast through this presentation with a middle-of-the-pack hero that would earn him a middle-of-the-pack grade. Since Alice didn't know this, though, he was forced to play his character in an alternate direction. Instead of showing that he wanted an average presentation and grade, Nick was making himself out to be a perfectionist and knocking down any hero suggestion that wasn't good enough for him and Alice to work on. Nick was also finding a slight bit of amusement in watching Alice vainly try to conceal her mounting frustration. How this girl had ever gotten the impression she was skilled in hiding her emotions and manipulating people was beyond Nick's impressive comprehension.
Okay, Alice said after a moment to gather her composure. Let's see what other options there are.
She pulled out the Xeroxed list that Dean Blaine had provided each group, showing which heroes were available for them to choose from.
How about the K?
Retired too young.
Alpha Blaster?
Honestly? You want us to do a report on someone with vocabulary-based powers?
Alice had to admit, even to her, that one seemed pretty bad.
Well, what about Everest?
Alice asked.
Perfect, Nick replied.
Really?
Totally, Nick confirmed. But Vince already texted me and told me that's the one he and his partner got approved to do.
But then why didn't you...
Alice began to stammer.
I'll relax, Nick assured her. We'll find someone good.
Well, I'm done,
Alice declared, dumping the pages in Nick's lap and stopping his slow, circular turning.
You pick the next one and let's see if I think your choice is good enough.
Nick scooped up the pages and pretended to look through them. The truth was, he had memorized this list before he and Alice had even left Dean Blaine's classroom for gym. It had taken Alice a bit longer to break than he'd expected, but the disintegration of one's pride was always difficult to apply a realistic time frame to. She'd finally defaulted to the princess he knew lurked inside that socialite facade, though, and that meant he could get a topic chosen and be done with it.
Azarel lived an interesting life, Nick remarked offhandedly.
Interesting enough?
Alice asked, crossing her arms and setting her jaw.
There's always Lickitar,
Nick ventured once more. Alice did nothing but raise an eyebrow.
Okay, look,
Nick said, in his best, I'm being humbled by this experience voice. It seems like you and I both have different ideas on who we should pick for this project. Agreed? Alice slowly nodded her head. But the one thing we can both agree on is that if we don't pick someone soon, we're likely to end up with nothing but the dregs left as our options. Nick continued the train of thought.
That's not entirely impossible,
Alice acquiesced. So rather than bickering back and forth all day, why don't we try a different method to pick our subject? Nick asked.
Just a wild guess here. You already have such a method in mind?
Alice asked, not bothering to mask her sarcasm.
That I do,
Nick said, breezing right past the accusation in her words. Instead, he set the list down on the coffee table and produced a penny from his pocket. Let's flip a coin on it.
Like what? Heads or tails on each name systematically as a veto system until we narrow it down to one name?
No, that would take forever, Nick chided. I mean, literally. I'll flip the penny, and whatever name it lands on is the one we use.
That is utterly ridiculous,
Alice replied without hesitation.
But more productive than fighting all afternoon, Nick pointed out. Besides, it isn't as dumb as it seems. Remember, my power is controlling luck. If I max out my good luck in this situation, then the penny should land on the best option for us.
Uh-huh, Alice scoffed skeptically. And after less than a year of control, you think you can use your abilities for something that abstract?
Well, I haven't tested it, Nick lied. But theoretically, it should be possible. What's it hurt to try, at least?
Fine, Alice said, after a calculating pause. I reserve the right to veto whoever it lands on if I don't like it, though.
I'll agree to that, as long as we look them up and give them a thorough once-over, Nick said.
Alice gave him a nod, and with sudden dexterity, he flipped the small copper coin into the air. As soon as it was out of his hand, he focused himself and poured his luck into the coin, willing it to come down on the best possible result. He was careful to breathe deep and do other mild physical gestures that the others hadn't picked up on yet. Nick had spent weeks before coming here creating fake tells that would crop up whenever he used his powers. The only real tell was difficult to miss, so he'd been fastidious in drawing attention away with the decoys. The penny tumbled down onto the list, landing squarely on a single name. Alice and Nick both leaned over and looked down at the printed page tucked beneath the coin. Nick let out a low whistle.
Man, talk about the dregs.
So, you're a telepath?
Herschel asked.
Nah, man, Jedi,
Alice said once more.
You know, like the Order of Space Knights created in films by the great George Lucas.
The two of them were in a cafeteria getting dinner and discussing options for their project. In the course of the day, Herschel had found that he had a surprising amount in common with his new project partner, including a love of sci-fi, video games, and vintage comic books. The one sticking point he kept coming back to was Alex's power, or at least Alex's description of the power.
You can move things with your mind and pick up thoughts and emotions, right?
Herschel asked.
I know this sounds crazy, but to me, it feels like I move things with the Force, not my mind. Other than that, you're pretty close,
Alex agreed with a cheerful head nod.
Plus, I can sort of do the mind trick.
The one where you put thoughts into weak or unfocused minds? That's the Jedi mind trick you're talking about?
Herschel tried to clarify.
Yeah, I can make it work about 10% of the time,
Alex confirmed.
So, 1 out of 10 times you try to tell someone to do something, and they do it?
Eventually,
Alex said.
You do realize that sounds a lot like a telepath and telekinetic,
Herschel said carefully.
Not like the abilities of practitioners of a religion from a science fiction movie.
Yeah, but it's not,
Alex said simply.
I know what you're thinking. I've heard it since I was a kid. Every teacher and coach my parents hired to help me hone my powers tried to convince me it was my mind doing this stuff, not the Force.
And they were unsuccessful, I take it,
Herschel noted.
They were unsuccessful because they were wrong. If I try to focus my mind and make even a pencil move, nothing happens. But if I reach out to it with the Force, I can juggle weights and golf carts. I know myself, and I know my power. And maybe it's because I've always seen it a certain way and it's too late to change. But in my head, I'm a Jedi.
Alex said once more, not forcefully, but with a sense of deep conviction and confidence. So there it was. Alex considered his powers to work as though he were a Jedi, and would not budge one bit on the topic. It was an oddity, but then again, Herschel loved dressing up like an elf lord and defending his castle. If anyone should be able to understand sculpting one's own reality, it was him. Besides, it seemed likely that state of mind and perception were important for someone whose powers were linked to their brain.
A real Jedi, huh? That's pretty cool,
Herschel said, smiling and picking up the ketchup for his fries.
Anyway, who do you think we should do our project on?
35.
Oh, dear,
Will said, gazing at the glowing screen of his cell phone.
It seems I'll have to cut our study session short today.
That's fine, Vince assured him. I think we got a lot of good material for the project so far. We can pick up here tomorrow.
I appreciate your understanding,
Will said with a smile. He reached across the table and began scooping books and notes into his backpack. Did something come up? Vince asked.
You could say that. It seems my sister has been challenged to a ranking match, so I feel a bit compelled to be there in support,
Will explained. I didn't know you had a sister, Vince commented, packing away his own things. If Will was heading out, Vince felt he may as well do the same. He could get back above ground, grab some dinner, maybe even see Sasha for a bit before he tackled the rest of his work for the evening.
Her name is Jill. It is purely speculation, but I've always believed our parents must have been sadists to give twins rhyming names,
Will said. It's not really that bad, Vince lied. Will stopped packing, looked Vince in the eyes, and stared. Okay, it's pretty bad, Vince said, breaking after mere seconds.
I know,
Will said simply, readying himself to leave. Vince was about finished as well, so they exited the library together and began walking toward the lifts and combat cells. The two had been holed up in the underground library, which was similar to the one on the regular campus, but stocked with a somewhat different selection of reading material. Very few normal Lander students found themselves in need of books on how to deal with radioactive fallout, or the study of ancient war formation techniques. In the HCP, though, such things were considered required reading. So, Vince said, awkwardness and a poor understanding of social convention forcing him to make small talk. What are your sister's abilities?
She manipulates technology,
Will answered. Like she can turn on cars, or like she can become the internet?
Somewhere in between,
Will chuckled.
She can interface with software, but only to a limited point. If you asked her to type on a computer without her hands, or drive a car from a block away, those things would be in her arsenal. Asking her to hack into the Pentagon would be well out of her reach, though. It's like she talks to the machines and asks them nicely to cooperate.
That seems pretty useful, Vince said, as long as you have plenty of tech around.
At that point, having a brother whose power is mechanical genius comes in rather handy,
Will said. Yeah, I've seen some of the stuff you use in class. The self-writing pen seemed pretty awesome, Vince said.
Will shrugged.
It frees up my hands and lets me get written notes. The hardest part was designing it so it could balance continuously on the tip while moving.
I bet, Vince agreed. With you building her gadgets and her being able to use them with a thought, I bet your sister is one dynamite fighter.
She's good, but there are plenty better,
Will admitted.
She only came in 14th in the initial ranking. Of course, as the gear I build for her improves, and she learns to fight more effectively, I expect to see a significant rise in her ranks over the years.
I'm sure you will, Vince encouraged. What about your rank, though?
I'm not combat compatible,
Will replied with open honesty.
I can build things ahead of the technological curve. There are some who don't even believe that should count me as a super. I'll certainly never be able to match what the others can do on the front line of battle. I'll have my uses, though. They just won't be gauged on how well I throw a punch.
If you're focused on the rhino charging at you, you're likely to miss the panther sneaking up on your rear, Vince said. Will raised his eyebrows curiously. It's something my father used to say. It meant I should learn to use misdirection and keep myself aware at all times. But it seemed sort of applicable to your situation, Vince explained. Just because you aren't a thick-skinned, muscle-bound monster doesn't mean you aren't dangerous.
True, Will said slowly. Although I still feel my place on the battlefield is supporting others in the background.
Maybe it is, Vince agreed. All that really matters is that you're happy with what you're doing and where you're going.
And I am,
Will said as they walked into the central hall. Vince saw the lifts at the south end and readied himself to head back above ground. Before he left, though, a question struck him. I hope your sister does well today, Vince said. Who is she fighting, anyway?
One of the girls she shares a suite with, a friend named Sasha,
Will told him.
She has pink streaks in her hair and super speed. Very difficult to miss.
Vince was in wholehearted agreement as he changed his direction and began walking next to Will once more, mind already racing ahead of him to the fight that was beginning in the combat cells.
36. Ever since Vince had first met Sasha that first day in the infirmary, she had been perpetually light-hearted. Her emotional range seemed to consist of sassy, flirty, and spunky. This wasn't to say she never had her down moments, just that she seemed to carry everything, even sadness, with a strange sense of cheerful apathy, as though nothing mattered too much, like none of it could really touch her. The girl Vince was gazing at through the observation window looked nothing like the one he had grown close to over the previous weeks. Oh, her face and hair were the same, as was her uniform, but the girl herself was utterly different. Gone was the smirk hidden in the angles of her face, the carefree posture, and the easy manner with which she moved. Her eyes were hard now and focused. Every step she took as she and her opponent positioned themselves for the fight to come was calculated, careful, and delicate. It struck a memory within Vince of when he and his father had snuck into a zoo and Vince had gotten to see a pair of tigers. Sasha shared their same rippling gait, smooth and deliberate, but able to attack at any moment. The other girl in the cell, Jill, didn't seem to be taking things any lighter. She was a girl of medium height with chopped short, dirty blonde hair. Instead of the standard uniform, Jill was sporting something that looked a lot like a one-piece flight suit, except with baubles and electronics bulging out at random intervals. As the girls moved to their starting sides of the cell, Jill took a helmet she had carried in her arms and slipped it over her head, obscuring any sign of her face behind a black visor. Outside gear had to be approved, but so long as it corresponded to your power, it was permitted in official matches.
I see they're taking each other quite seriously,
Will commented. He and Vince were standing together to watch the fight, making sure to give the referee and a small girl who was presumably the healer ample room in which to act if necessary.
Yeah, Vince agreed. They are.
Is Sasha your girlfriend?
Will asked bluntly. If either one had been paying more attention, they might have noticed the sudden swivel of the small girl's head toward their direction. Both had eyes only for what was on the other side of the glass, though, so her action went unobserved.
Sort of. We haven't really talked about it or anything, but...
Yeah, pretty much, Vince said.
I hope that we can maintain our affable partnership, regardless of the outcome of this fight,
Will said. Vince hesitated before he answered.
You think Jill's going to win, don't you?
I don't know,
Will replied.
I built the suit she's wearing, and I am very well informed of my sister's capabilities in combat, but when dealing with super speed, nothing is written in stone.
As the girls readied themselves, waiting for the referee's signal to start, Vince silently agreed with Will. Both of them seemed intensely focused on this match, and he didn't know which of them would be walking away from it. He doubted they did either.
I don't have to take this personally, if you don't, Vince said. After all, this isn't a squabble. They're trying themselves against one another as warriors. Whoever loses, there's no shame here.
Agreed, Will said, though I'd keep that little theory away from whichever actually does lose.
Duh,
Vince said, with a nod of his head. Vince was young, foolhardy, and ambitious. That didn't make him utterly idiotic, though. The referee pressed a small button, and the dean's recorded voice began to play from within the cell. When it concluded, their match would begin.
Be ready,
he said to the small girl at his side.
This one could easily end messy.
Sasha adjusted her footing without taking her eyes off Jill. The proverbial bell had been rung, yet both of them stood steady, neither rushing forward to make the first move. Sasha adjusted again, wishing dearly that Jill's head wasn't hidden behind a helmet and visor. It wasn't that Sasha was so cutthroat that she would have gone for the face or eyes, not to say that she wouldn't, though. It was that blocking the face took away a lot of unconscious tells. Eye movements, facial tics, even nostril flaring could often be that little extra advantage that meant the difference between a win and a loss. Sasha took a step forward, then one back, gauging Jill's reaction. Her opponent moved back a hair, but otherwise kept her same stance. So that meant Jill was playing defensive, waiting for Sasha to make the first move. It was the smart play, the one Sasha would have made if the roles were reversed. Charging someone with super speed was a good way to go down fast. You fully commit to an attack, and before you realize it, they've moved out of the way and turned your own momentum against you. It seemed Sasha was stuck on the offensive. That was okay, though. It was the area Sasha was the most comfortable in anyway. Choosing an angle, Sasha accelerated into a blur and demolished the gap between her and Jill. She didn't make contact with her, though, instead opting to ring around her twice before coming to a stop at her rear. Jill was half-turned when Sasha halted. Sasha spat a curse under her breath. Jill's reaction time was good, and that meant once she attacked, there was a possibility Jill could counter with whatever gizmos were hidden up her sleeves. Super speed was a wonderful gift,
but its weakness was that it was hard to aim precisely when going several hundred miles an hour. Sure, Sasha's perceptions were sped up somewhat, otherwise she'd never be able to maneuver with her talent, but there were limits. They increased proportionally, in the same way that it would be hard for a regular person to do something precise while he or she was running full speed. Sasha was bound by the same obstacle. If she wanted to do more than swing wild, she'd need to slow down significantly when she made her attack. It wasn't ideal, but Sasha had picked this partner. She'd issued this challenge. It would move her up 5 ranks, into the range where she'd be eligible for combat. She narrowed her eyes slightly, clearly betraying her intention to attack. It didn't matter. If Jill could keep up, then she would. If she couldn't, then no amount of warning from Sasha would make the difference. It escaped her own thoughts that mere moments earlier she had been thinking about the advantages of reading facial tics, but before that realization could bob to the surface of her mind, she was already running again. Sasha didn't bolt in directly. That would have been ludicrous. Instead, she circled Jill, drawing progressively closer, then pulling back. She pulled a few feints, seeing how quickly Jill reacted to her advances. The closer she got, though, the more confident Sasha grew. Jill was close on her blocks, but not quite there. If Sasha had followed through on one of her punches, she would have definitely made contact. Sasha looped around again, this time committing to her attack mentally. She would pull up short and let loose a flurry of super-fast punches. Even if Jill did manage to block one, the other fist would gain momentum and connect at least 5 times before Jill would be able to react. Sasha put in one last bolt forward, then pulled back on the metaphorical throttle and let fly at Jill with both hands. Those who were blessed with super speed had been given a significant measure of durability along with that gift. As such, their bodies could withstand moving and stopping at such high speeds. It meant that Sasha could punch flesh and bone with tremendous momentum and only suffer minimal damage herself. While it didn't work against harder materials, steel for example, she could easily handle regular combat. So when Sasha's fists connected with Jill's ribs, she felt a sense of elation that she'd gotten her blows through without Jill even coming close to blocking either hand. A millisecond after that, it dawned on her that Jill hadn't even tried to block. She might have speculated more about why, as she continued to punch Jill, if that had been an option, but unfortunately, that's when Sasha's time ran out. The next millisecond, you see, was when the pain started.
"What happened?" Vince cried, as Sasha violently flew back from Jill and into the concrete wall.
"She electrified her suit at the moment of impact, giving your girl a devastating shock," Will said, his voice even, but his tone not entirely hiding the distress he felt in his own stomach.
"She can do that?"
Vince asked, eyes on Sasha's crumpled, twitching form.
"It was the only option she ever really had," Will confirmed. "Sasha was too fast for Jill to have a hope of hitting her with any other kind of weapon. The best bet she had was to use herself as bait and strike when Sasha made contact. It was a good idea, but it wasn't without its risks."
For the first time, Vince let his eyes move away from Sasha and back to her opponent. Jill was hunched over. He could tell from the movement of her back that she was breathing with arduous labor.
"My sister put all of the suit's power into that jolt," Will continued. "That means the electronic shields and dampeners were shut down. She took Sasha's blows full on and left herself completely vulnerable."
"I think her ribs are broken," Vince noted, a fresh note of empathic concern in his voice.
at the least. She has no physical powers, so those blows affected her just like any other human. She should be okay for now, but I'd be distressed if the end of this match weren't in sight,
Will admitted, gesturing to the referee. Vince looked over and realized the referee was methodically counting down from 10, eyes locked on Sasha's fallen form. If she couldn't get up before 0, this bout would be over and the girls could get healed. Vince actually felt a rush of relief as the referee dropped past the count of 3. It sucked that Sasha lost, but right now, his mind was solely fixated on getting to her and making sure she was okay. When the referee's hand struck the number 2, though, the counting stopped. If that hadn't told him enough, the gasp from Will made the picture clear before Vince could turn to the window and see it. Sure enough, Sasha was clawing her way up the concrete wall with one hand, slowly dragging herself vertical. The significance of this wasn't lost on anyone watching, least of all her opponent. Without hesitation, Jill threw her hands up, signaling her surrender and the end of the match. With twin sighs of relief, Vince and Will bounded down the stairs to the door, eager to make sure everyone was all right.
37.
I heard through the grapevine that Miss Foster advanced her ranking this week,
Mr. Numbers said as he moved his knight.
Are we calling the weekly logs you get of all combat trials the grapevine now?
Mary asked, as she began contemplating her next move.
Touché,
Mr. Numbers replied. The two were sitting in the common room early Saturday morning. Thus far, they were the only two up and around, save for Mr. Transport, who was off running errands. As soon as Mr. Numbers had stepped out of his room, Mary had been waiting, chessboard in hand. So, after a cup of coffee, Mr. Numbers had accepted her challenge, and the duo had begun their second game of chess. Mr. Numbers took a sip of his coffee as Mary made her next move.
I notice you're using both rooks normally this time, he commented.
He's been fixed,
Mary answered to the unasked question.
Has he now?
Mr. Numbers mumbled, measuring the board to plan his retaliation.
I also heard through the grapevine that Mr. Daniel's attitude has improved tremendously since his bout with Mr. Taylor. It seems he is punctual when attending gym and attentive to everything Coach George says to him. The only curious habit is that whenever he is running, he makes strange hand motions.
Motions similar to the ones learned in the foundation of a martial art? Say, ones that a person might work on constantly if they were trying to ingrain the movements as reflex in their brain, for example?
Mary asked.
Precisely those,
Mr. Numbers confirmed.
How odd,
Mary said neutrally.
It's your move.
I'm aware,
Mr. Numbers said, shifting one of his pawns.
I take it you and your dorm mates will be meeting up with your partners to work on your projects today.
Herschel might. He and Alex have been eating together ever since they were paired up,
Mary said.
If I recall correctly, Vince and Nick are spending the day watching a movie marathon in the boys' lounge. Then Vince is celebrating Sasha's victory with her tonight.
You seem very well informed of your dorm mates' plans. And Alice?
Alice is going to contemplate many options, then ultimately spend her day sulking over the fact that she has no one to spend time with, despite the fact that her own fear of intimacy with others is the driving force behind that.
Mary told him, moving her queen.
You could always try to break through that fear and befriend her,
Mr. Numbers pointed out.
Others could. I'm too much, too soon for her. Like dropping an aquaphobic in the middle of the ocean. befriending a telepath won't challenge her personal limitations and obsession for privacy. It will shatter them. Maybe one day, though. I think I would like that,
Mary said.
I see, Mr. Numbers said, moving his knight once more in order to set a trap. So which chess piece will you be fixing next?
Well, the others are a bit more complicated,
Mary responded.
The bishop is easily as strong as the rook, albeit in a different way. But unlike the rook, he's afraid of his own strength. The knight doesn't understand that just because she isn't as outwardly dangerous as the other pieces doesn't mean she is useless. And, of course, the king doesn't see that his role is as a strategist, maybe even a leader. Instead, he is stuck on the perception of himself as vulnerable and weaker than anyone else on the board.
Mary moved her king to illustrate the point, going back and forth along the rear row as she had throughout the entire game.
And the queen?
Mr. Numbers asked, as he repressed a smile at Mary moving directly into his trap. She was an utter amateur, but a part of him still took a beat of pride away from every victory, regardless of its challenge or relevance.
The queen is a very powerful piece,
Mary said,
but she's not so strong that she can stand against the other army by herself.
Indeed, Mr. Numbers agreed. Checkmate.
So it is,
Mary noted.
Next week?
Not in the mood for another?
One total loss a week is all I can handle, I'm afraid,
Mary said with a soft smile.
Besides, I think the rest of my day just became a lot fuller.
Alice didn't hear Mary's declaration. She had already stormed off to her room. Having woken earlier than usual, Alice was on her way into the common room so she could get water from the kitchen, when she realized she could vaguely overhear Mr. Numbers and Mary having a conversation. Never one to pass up the opportunity to gather information, Alice had planted herself on the other side of the wall and strained to catch every word. When talk had turned to her, though, and Mary had called out, so perfectly, exactly what her plans were and why they involved no other people, Alice had all but stomped back into her bedroom, slamming the door and sitting down on her bed. She had been fuming ever since, her pride battling against her rationale as she tried to make peace with the things Mary had said, a mental tornado that could only settle down on the trailer of one logical conclusion. By the time Alice reached it, Mary had been waiting for nearly half an hour. 38. Two crisp knocks signaled Alice's arrival at Mary's door. Mary got up from her bed slowly and walked over to answer it. Of course, she could have just waited outside in the girls' lobby or been waiting by the door when Alice knocked, but that would have made her foreknowledge of the arrival just a bit too apparent. While Alice was by no means simple enough to think Mary didn't have some inclination she was coming, she didn't want to talk about or acknowledge it. And Mary was respecting those wishes. After all, Alice was here to offer something of an olive branch, so it was the least Mary could do.
Yes?
Mary said as she pulled open her door.
I'm heading into town today for some light shopping and lunch. Would you like to come along?
Alice asked, not without some stiffness in her voice.
I'd love to,
Mary replied with a warm grin. She stepped out and closed the door firmly behind her.
When do we leave?
Immediately, Alice said, glossing over the fact that Mary had physically responded to the answer before even asking the question. It was to be expected with a telepath. She'd known this when she decided to invite Mary along. It was part of the package, part of spending a day with a girl who could read her thoughts.
Mary had been right about Alice avoiding her, and about her having trouble connecting with people at college. But Mary had taken it too far when she said that Alice would be unable to make friends with a mind reader. The fact that Mary had been basing her deduction on Alice's actions, and that it was a completely logical conclusion, became utterly irrelevant in the face of one all-consuming truth that had burned its way through Alice's wounded pride and hidden shame. No one told Alice Adair what she was or wasn't able to do.
"Let's hurry," Alice said. "The restaurant I'd like to visit fills up early for lunch, so it's best if we're there as soon as possible."
"Of course,"
Mary nodded in agreement. "What's on the docket?" Vince asked as he stepped into the boys' lounge, fresh bowl of popcorn in one hand and a pair of sodas in the other. "Zombie Prince 4, War Zombies 2, Hellsong, The Rise of the Zombie King, and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, Nick said from his perch in a recliner, remote in hand and eyes fixed on the slowly loading screen. "Should I even ask about the last one?"
"Hey man, that's a good film, and it provides excellent insight into the female perception of romance," Nick defended.
Vince sat down on the recliner next to Nick's and put the popcorn on a table between them, sliding over one soda as well.
"I'm not buying it."
"Okay, fine. The girl at the video store was hot, and I didn't want her to think my cinematic taste was one-dimensional," Nick sighed.
"Despite the fact that it clearly is," Vince pointed out.
"Hey, man, you don't know me entirely. Maybe I like romantic comedies. I could be very multi-layered," Nick said.
Vince crunched a kernel of popcorn and kicked his seat into the reclined position.
"I'll believe it when I see it. So where's Herschel, anyway?"
Nick shrugged.
"I think he and his project partner were grabbing lunch after doing some work this morning. They said they might stop in."
"Those guys are really determined to do well on that assignment, aren't they?" Vince asked.
"That or they have nothing better to do," Nick said. "Though I don't see the rush. We've still got weeks left. We should be spending time thinking about which Halloween costumes we should be saving for or working on."
Vince snorted. "We're in college. You really think anyone actually cares about Halloween, let alone puts in effort on a costume?"
"I'm leaning toward Cleopatra," Alice said, as she sipped her espresso delicately. "Of course, there are a few famous Victorian characters I would enjoy portraying as well, but the drawing point is also the problem. Those gowns are so complex and elegant, and while they would be fun to wear, it would hardly be in the spirit of the holiday at our age."
"How so?"
Mary asked politely. It had been a bit of a straining day for her so far. The lunch had been delicious, and Alice was enjoyable enough company, but Mary wasn't used to asking clarifying questions or pretending she didn't already know the answers to things she might idly wonder. This habit of feigning ignorance was helping Alice feel more at ease with their time together, but it was at the cost of Mary's nerves.
"For girls our age attending a university, the accepted societal convention is that our costumes should be somewhat more sensual than they were in our younger years,"
Alice replied.
"So we're supposed to dress slutty?"
"I prefer to think of it as we can get away with doing so, judgment-free,"
Alice said, a blatant smirk creeping across the side of her mouth.
"That is a good point,"
Mary agreed.
"Although, I don't know if it would fit my style. I was thinking I'd just be a mummy or something."
Alice looked at the girl sitting across the table from her, slowly working her way through a piece of cheesecake, and realized something that had never entered her mind before. Mary was insecure about the way she looked. She'd always been so cheerily bizarre, so oddly confident, and seemed to be 3 steps ahead of everyone else, that it had never occurred to Alice that a girl like Mary might suffer from something as mundane as a poor body image. It wasn't that she was unattractive, either. Her amber eyes were striking,
and her wild hair actually seemed to complement her face. She was petite, too. It was easy to forget, with the powerful energy Mary seemed to exude, but she was only about 5'2", with a lithe body that matched. In that moment, discovering her terrifying, invincible, telepathic neighbor had a weakness, Alice felt something she had never genuinely expected. She felt a spark of a connection to Mary.
"A mummy might be fun,"
Alice said kindly.
"I bet we can find something that flatters you more than that, though."
Mary raised an eyebrow.
"You want to go costume shopping?" "Why not? I said we would go shopping anyway, and besides, it's early October, so the stores should be open. We'll have fun."
Alice gave Mary a sincere smile, and with a crash, Mary realized she had just maneuvered herself into spending a Saturday being dressed up like Alice's personal doll. Mary was a firm believer that necessity and duty should trump one's own desires. That said, she still found herself thankful that Alice didn't have telepathy as well. Otherwise, all the cursing going on in Mary's head might have been a tad difficult to explain. 39.
"Well, gory as that was, I think this is where I bail out for the day,"
Vince said, rising from his chair and stretching deeply while the ending credits for the previous movie rolled across the screen.
"Ah, come on, we still got like 2 more,
Nick protested.
"Yeah,"
Herschel agreed. Herschel and Alex had joined up with them halfway through the first movie, finding the siren song of slacking while watching slasher cinema too alluring to resist in favor of homework. "And I'm certain they'll be wonderful movies," Vince placated. "I've got to get heading over to Sasha's, though, remember? We're celebrating her rise in rank."
"So bring her back," Nick countered. "What better way to celebrate life than to observe those lacking in it?"
"You want me to congratulate the girl I'm dating on a serious accomplishment by making her watch bad zombie movies?"
"Vince,"
Nick began in an off-puttingly serious tone,
"a woman who won't celebrate with zombie movies isn't a woman you want to keep around. Trust me, that's gospel truth right there."
"Amen,"
Alex chimed in. Vince stared into the sleek lenses of his friend's glasses for a moment, then shook his head and barked out a laugh.
Okay, you guys win. I'll bring it up to her as an option. But if she says no, consider me gone for the night."
"That seems fair,"
Herschel said.
Yeah, fair schmear,"
Nick said with a wave as he dragged himself out of his own chair.
"We may as well get some dinner ourselves while Vince is applying the zombie barometer to his relationship."
"Zombie barometer? Really?" Vince asked, as the other two stood from their reclined positions to join them. Nick simply gave a small nod and replied with 2 words. "Gospel, truth." The 4 hungry young supers headed out of the boys' lounge and made a path for the entrance hall, nearly plowing right into Mary and Alice as the 2 girls entered the common room.
"Oh, good," Alice said briskly. "I'm glad you're all here. I have something we need to talk about. Just let me go put away our packages."
With that, Alice scooped up Mary's bags, along with her own, and moved with surprising swiftness into the girls' lounge.
"Actually, we were sort of heading out," Vince began calling after her.
"You're staying,"
said Mary, with a "thou shalt not question me, for I've been stuck trying on clothes all day and I am desperate to share the pain" tone. Okay, Vince may not have picked up on all of the subtlety contained in her words, but the gist of it came through.
"I guess we have a few minutes to spare," Vince acquiesced.
Herschel and Nick might have had fleeting thoughts of protesting on their own, but one look from Mary's weary yet scorching eyes told them, quite clearly, that they'd be better off minding their own business.
"Well, I guess I'll go head over to the dining hall and grab us a table,"
Alex offered.
I'm sure you're welcome to stay, Nick assured him. I'm equally sure that being able to leave is the privilege in this case, though, so do what you want.
Yeah, I'll just meet up with you guys after,
Alex said, taking in a long stare at Mary's haggard stance,